Thoughts on the Life of Edwin Marion Whiting by the Whiting Brothers. Edwin Marion Whiting was the son of Edwin Whiting and Mary Elizabeth Cox Whiting. His mother was one of five wives. He had six brothers and two sisters besides about 30 half-brothers and sisters. Three of the wives lived in one great big house. It was all very pleasant, and many times Edwin made the remark that, "I'd just as soon ask either of the other women for a piece of bread and butter as my own mother." His experiences as a boy are very interesting to us, because they were so different compared to what we have now. Every day Edwin and his older brother Edgar had to take the milk cows to a good feeding place on top of a hill. They had to stay there and herd them, and as it was a long ways from home, they took their lunch with them. One day their mother had made some strawberry preserves, and had given them a small glassful, for they were good boys. Any kind of fruit or preserves was a real treat to them then. With this special lunch, they could hardly wait for noon time to come. They played and tended the cows as usual, but often guessed at the time. Suddenly Edwin noticed a large Indian climbing the hill. Edgar ran to the rock, where the lunch was hidden, and pulled out some of the bread and the jam. These he hid under another rack. When the Indian reached the place where the boys were, he made signs he wanted food. The boys made out that they couldn't understand him for some time, but as the man was getting angry, they went for the lunch. This he ate and wanted more. Being afraid of him, the boys brought out the bread and jam they had hidden. After eating the bread, the Indian picked up the glass of jam. He ran his dirty finger into the glass down to the bottom, then licked his finger. He waited a minute, then tasting it again, he said, "Ugh," and threw the treasured glass of jam down the hill. He then got up and went his way. So he left the boys without lunch, and worst of all, their precious jam was gone. Another day on the hill herding cows, the boys saw the cutest little skunk. It ran into a hollow log, and the boys decided to catch it alive. So each got a long willow and one at each end started poking into the log. They hadn't made many pokes before the skunk decided to defend himself. Edwin's clothes were buried and he slept in the shed, and was not allowed to enter the house until several days later. One of their chief playthings was a limber willow and hard mud balls. These were for shooting different things, as they did not make flippers then. The Indians were coming to make peace. This cry spread like lightning over the small town, and all the children lined up to watch the Indians ride by. Edwin, Edgar, Arthur and John were standing by the road watching the Indians go by. One was on rather a slow, sleepy horse, and was a little behind the others. Edgar had his willow gun in hand. He shot a mud ball at the Indian and hit his horse, which nearly threw the man off. The boys ran around the house as the Indian started after them. As they ran, the Indian stopped and shook his fist after them, then went on. Having gotten off so easily, the boys went to the other side of the house. Here Edgar shot again. This time the Indian turned his horse and ran back to where the boys were, but the boys ran back around the house. Some of the other Indians noticed the stopped Indian and called to him to hurry. The man joined the others, but he kept shaking his fist at the boys and saying things they couldn't understand. Through all this, a little old Englishman, who lived across the street, had been watching the boys. Now he rushed over to where the boys stood watching the retreating Indian and exclaimed hotly, "You young imps, those Indians are going to make peace and you make them mad. It is a risky business, yes sir, a risky business." Thus he raved and scolded. Being afraid that he would tell their parents, the boys promised to be good. Everything that came up in later life, the boys would repeat the old man's warning, "It is a risky business." The home they lived in was located outside the town wall, or the stone fort, which was erected to keep off Indian attacks. When the Indians were coming, three shots was the signal for everyone to come into the town. One night very late, the alarm was given, and being very excited, everyone was hurrying to get inside the town walls. The boys ran as fast as they could, for they had not stopped to dress, and the stones hurt their feet. By the time they reached the town, they were out of breath and very tired as well as frightened. There was a large crowd already there and more coming all the time. The men had guns or clubs or anything they could fight with. The excitement lulled as no Indians came, and finally scouts were sent to see where the Indians were. The scouts were gone a long time and it gradually grew lighter, then the people became conscious of how they were dressed. Finally the scouts came, and reported only having found one poor Indian out about 5 miles from town struggling to get back to his own camp. By this time it was good daylight and the boys went home as fast as they had come, being very embarrassed by the stares of the people. So much, in fact, they forgot to be angry about the false alarm that had been given. After that they firmly resolved to dress, regardless of Indians in the night. There was an old crazy man, who roamed about the town, living where he could. One day he came to the Whiting home. The children all hid to watch him as they were afraid of him, because of the stories they had heard about the old man. He entered the kitchen without knocking and asked for something to eat. Edwin's mother gave him a large piece of bread and butter. He took it and started out the door, when he met the dog, which gazed up longingly at the bread. After looking steadily for more than a minute, into the dog's eyes the man thrust out the bread to the dog and said, "Take it, you noble fellow, you need it worse than I do." This has also been a byword of the family throughout the years. After having done this, he started on. The lady had seen the act, called to him, but he grinned back at her and went on, so she went back to her work. The old fellow ran into the clothesline, which had a big wash hung on it. Stepping, he said, "Hello, fence, how well you trade shirts." So, carefully removing his dirty, torn shirt, he hung it on the line very neatly and picking up the best shirt on the line, he put it on and went on his way. The boys had seen this, but were afraid to stop him. Their life had its serious side, too. Every member of the family, from the smallest to the oldest, had their work to do to help make the living for the family. Their father was a farmer and planted most of the best trees around the country. He taught his boys many things about agriculture as well as other things, such as bees, blacksmithing and carpentering. There were very few schools and what there were only taught a few things, and didn't run very long. So most of the schooling the children received was from their mother, who was a school teacher before she was married. There was also much sickness, especially typhoid fever, and most of the family contracted it, as it would return every year or so. In later years, Edwin's mother and older brothers were called to Arizona. The main reason Edwin's mother came was to bring the youngest sister of the family, whose health was very poor, and the doctors thought this climate might help her, but after living here for nearly 2 years and her health was worse, she wished to return home to see her father and friends once more. But she never reached her hometown, for she died at House Rack Valley and was buried there. Today it is still one of the farthest graves from a town in the United States. Edwin continued on living at Brigham City, where he met his future wife, Anna Maria Isaacson, and lived in Arizona the greater part of his life. Later he moved to St. John's, where he was called to help settle this country. Here he and his wife made their permanent home, where he died in the summer of 1934, just after his 77th birthday. His wife and 9 children and many grandchildren and great-grandchildren survive him.